That old world chum, doo-doo-doo-doo. That old world chum, reviews say it's all right.
Hello, our lovely old world enjoyers, and welcome to episode 8 of That Old World Charm. My name is always Adam Camilleri. I'm joined by the full triumvirate of the old world, that being Danny, the sweetest of meats himself. Hello, mate.
Hey, Adam, how are you?
I'm pretty dang good. I love how we always have to do the how are you.
I want to know.
In a green room, disseminating what we're going to do for this episode for the last half an hour. I'm pretty good, mate, for those at home who are pontificating upon the mysteries of how production works.
Yeah. What's Adam up to? I mean, I'm thinking about that at least 3 or 4 times a week.
I'm enlightened. That is illuminating. I wish you had better things to do with your time. Hello, Peter the Falcon's joining us as well.
Hello, my babies, my cute babies. How are you?
He won't stop calling us that, by the way. He does it all the time.
You're my really little babies.
Just keep saying it.
It's rough.
I can't help it. You're just my little babies. Proud. It's mainly because when I'm talking to you, I'm also talking to my cat. So I rather than get confused, everyone is called that now in my life.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's just, you know.
That makes us feel,
You know, my life took a dramatic turn a couple years ago. And so now I get confused easily. I also hit 40. We've had the testicle talk on other episodes, but everything changed for me. So now everyone's my little babies.
And here I was thinking you're going to make then the Fire Nation attacked reference for Avatar.
You know, the new Avatar is coming out and it's going to be awful. And I'm really sad about it.
I will be very impressed if it's anything but awful. In fact, I'll be extremely grateful if it's anything but awful.
I am going to be shocked that somehow they made a worse representation of one of the best cartoons ever than M. Night Shyamalan did.
Yeah, and man.
I'm only here for that reason.
Well, it's a consistency thing. Ever since the Super Mario's movie and then followed by the Street Fighter movie.
Yeah,
and then
everything followed, has been downhill.
Dragon Ball Z, any of these iterations of beloved niche, you know, nerddoms being translated from an original, you know, piece of perfection into, you know, the big screen, usually a pile of garbage. And
all right.
There's probably an exception to that somewhere.
I mean, the first Mortal Kombat movie is not bad.
First Mortal Kombat movie is amazing. And actually,
the greatest theme song of all time, you mean?
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
that whole soundtrack was filled with bangers. Just absolute bangers.
Just like 8 remixes.
Oh, yeah.
The same song.
But all of them were great. And there was that Rammstein song, Rammstein. I loved it. Engel. Oh, great. If you like One Piece, I don't. I've never read or watched any of it before. But all of my friends that did thought that the Netflix adaptation was like the greatest thing that ever happened. So
legitimately. It was legitimately not bad.
So I guess like there it happens, but not with Avatar The Last Airbender. They just like the James Cameron movies did not do it justice.
Yeah, I agree.
By far, like they didn't even include air yet. And that was like a key element. Anyway, but yes, we're here and we're here to talk about Warhammer Old World.
In addition, we have diverted from our big blue book goodness and we are doing one of our other prime directives, which is reviewing factions. And we have so many factions to review because they all came at the same time and it is a whirlwind of delights. But we put up a post for a vote in our Patreon and in our Discord, voting for what faction you guys would like to have reviewed first up by us. And Warriors of Chaos won by one vote. We had a second place draw for Bretonians, Tomb Kings, Dwarves, and Vampire Counts, but one vote above them was Warriors of Chaos. And therefore, here we are doing our very first faction review, in-depth, holistic, all that good stuff, and giving you guys a flavor of what you can expect from us for these four. You know, we're going to be doing faction reviews probably for the next 6 months. There's that many to do, and we'll be interchanging them with other content as well, so it doesn't get too dry or a little bit too stale. But of course, it's a two-part podcast. First part coming out for you guys lovingly curated by Tech Priest Dickie, or is it Skink Priest Dickie, as it shall therefore be known.
And that'll be Priest Dickie.
That one. We'll add more names and nouns to that as we go.
I think I could do a real good Photoshop of a Slan Mage Priest Dickie, and he would be very upset.
He would. You should probably do that. Definitely.
He just pissing wouldn't talk to you again. But yeah, definitely do it.
Pissing off our editor is a great choice.
We recently did an episode where I swore multiple times and asked him to censor it out, and he missed them. I don't know if you guys listened. He censored out other words completely.
Yeah, like 5 seconds after you talked, it's like, yeah.
I mean, it was great. I had a good laugh.
It was, yeah, but it was comedian gold.
Man, Google Podcasts, not happy about it, though.
Yeah.
Not happy about it.
But part two of this one is me and these two lovely gentlemen are going to be writing a list talking about archetypes, what Warriors of Chaos have going for them and against them in certain matchups. And in addition, just pontificating upon where the strengths lie, building multiple different characters, what magic items, what magic laws you want to consider taking in your Warriors of Chaos or Wox, as they have been known evermore and shall probably be known in this old world also. We're going to jump in and get this party started because there is a little bit to disseminate. We don't actually quite know how long this is going to take because there's a first time doing it. And so the idea is we go to the page, in this case, in the Ravening Hordes book, where the content for the Warriors of Chaos starts, the actual rules. In this case, it is the army list. And we're going to go through what the T's and C's are there. Then we're going to go through some of the unit entries, the most poignant unit entries, or some of the meme unit entries that we like to joke about and poke fun at. In this case, probably the Hell Cannon. And then we're going to move on and we're going to read line for line every magic item, discuss what's good about it, what's bad at it. Is it worth your time? Is it worth your investment of points in your army list, etc.? And work our way through this thing pretty holistically. And the idea of this content and the idea of this right now is that a lot of people don't, especially if you do not play Warriors of Chaos, a lot of people don't have time to sit down and disseminate and absorb, you know, for an hour or two just to try, or 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 to try and get mastery and understanding about what this matchup is going to be like for them across the table. Or if you're just looking to for another opinion on something that you would love and enjoy but Warriors of Chaos yourself, you can sit back, listen to the three of us talk about it and absorb some goodness, hopefully, in addition, hopefully being entertained. But we're going to be starting this review on page 55 of the Ravening Hordes book if you want to follow along yourselves. And this is the Warriors of Chaos army list. And this is a little bit different to some others because there's actually no mandatory choice here, is there, lads? Which, Danny, why is that different and is that a good thing?
I mean, it's good for army variety because Warriors of Chaos kind of play in one very specific way. So I think it helps to maybe not lock them into like having to take an infantry unit or having to take a cavalry unit, which is kind of nice and lets you kind of build around that, which I do like. Yeah.
Also seems a little unfair though. Like if I had to have a guess after seeing just about any other, you know, army list, I would have assumed you had to take a unit of Warriors of Chaos, like either Warriors of Chaos or Warriors of Chaos Chosen or, you know, whatever, even a unit of Knights to, you know, be your bare minimum entry. Is it a bit BS that they don't have to, Pete?
No, I actually think, to be honest, more than anything, it's kind of a fluff thing. Because like Warriors of Chaos kind of come in a couple of varieties, despite being, you know, mostly like one note in what they do well. You know, you're either these like super elite, bunched up, you know, Warriors of Chaos and Chaos Knights, or you're like from a game perspective, you're like these Norskan warriors, which are generally like barely clothed, you know, demonic entities like marauders and forsaken that, you know, that aren't quite elite, but they make up for it with chutzpah. So, yep. I don't mind that they don't have that they don't have like a 1+ option anywhere. Cause I think that's fine. I think it's,
I can't wait to see an army list for a GT somewhere that just says heaps of chutzpah at the top.
I hope they do it. And they credit me.
Yeah. The Falcon said had to have the chutzpah. Anyway, is there anything interesting or anything really spicy to speak to in the army list? Cause it seems like it's actually one of the most simple to discuss, and there's pretty much nothing apart from the fact that you can only have one Chaos Lord or Demon Prince is pretty much the only denotation there. And I do like that. That to me feels fluffy and thematic as well, as in like when you get to that echelon of power in the Chaos realm, you don't really share. You don't like to deal with another commander of an equal ilk. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think that's relatively good. So we're jumping straight from that into the unit entries, and we're going to jump around here because I'm going to give Danny first pick. What is a unit in the current Warriors of Chaos army list that you think people need to know about?
Okay. And I know that you don't see them very much, maybe, or I feel like you might see them more because, I don't know, I don't think I've really ever seen the models in person. But Forsaken, I think, are a really great unit that people are maybe sleeping on. I don't know, maybe they're not, but I think they're core choice. They are They have a pretty good stat block for what they are. They are expensive, but you only have to take five of them in a unit. And I think in units of five, they are just, they're good at chaff. They're good at killing like light units. They're a great flanker. They have a ton of attacks.
Sometimes we can break down all the
stuff about them that's good. Like,
well, let's quickly pop off that data. So that unit entry for people. So they are 19 points per model, come with a movement of 5, weapon skill 4, strength and toughness 4, 1 wound, initiative 3, and attacks D3. So that is wildly skewed. They could have a single, or they could have 3 each, which is enormous in the game of the old world at the moment. Yeah. And then they come in 4 different flavors, of course, as associated with whichever god they are devoted. Khorne will get you hatred, so rerolls to hit. Nurgle will get you fear. Slaanesh will get you swift stride, which is pretty spicy actually on an infantry unit. And Zinch will get you magic resistance -3, which makes them all but immune to, you know, misc magic missiles and stuff. People are just really unwilling to throw their like small, cheap damage dealing spells at this unit if it is a 5-man. When they're -3, so there is a lot to talk about there, but. Peter, tell us about the special rules on this squad, and are they any good?
So Forsaken to me are a very unique choice from Danny. It's not that I hate them. I think they have a place for sure. I just also hate the randomness because they're a tool. And yes, I guess as a chaff clear, they're like, that's kind of what you're going to want to take them for. Cause I don't feel like you should take them for anything else because random attacks D3, you know, when you roll that one on your 19 point per model unit, it's going to suck. That Forsaken by Khorne helps a lot, though. I don't really rate the other Forsakens a whole lot.
Wow.
Maybe Zinch for the magic resistance, but even then, I think Khorne just for the rerolls is what you want. And then they have this rampant mutation ability, which every round... before you fight combat, you roll, and they get one of the following mutations for the turn. They either have venomous fangs on a 1 or 2, which gives them poisoned attacks. They have, and that's just for the combat phase. They have a 3 or 4 gives them razor talons, which gives them AP -2, or they can have decapitating claws, which gives them killing blow on a 5 or a 6, all of which are actually like excellent special abilities to have. It's just, man, when you roll that one on the D3, it feels terrible. That said, you know, they also have a 5-up armor. They have a 5-up invulnerable because they do have chaos armor 5+. They are immune to psychology. Their weapons are naturally AP -1 because of ensorcelled weapons. And they do have furious charge. So if you do get the charge off, you're at least base 2 attacks. So there is that. But man, like... I think it's just because I hate randomness that I feel bad whenever I try to put these in a list.
Okay.
Well, I think
can these I are tell a you why they're good. Adam, I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. If you want to go ahead.
No, this is your choice, Matt. You speak to it.
Okay. All right. Peter just listed off some of their special rules, and I feel like that's where like the strength of this unit lies. Being both immune to psychology and stubborn means you have an absolutely like, you know exactly what they're going to do all the time for being a chat. They're not going to run away from panic. They're not going to they're never going to be misplaced because of that. And because they're stubborn, unless they kill them all, they're going to fall back in good order at least one time until you really set up charges for flanks and things like that. And it's pretty annoying to kill 5 models that are toughness 4, 5-up armor, 5-up ward. Like it's more annoying than you probably than like you would initially like look at the unit and think that they're annoying like or like hard to deal with. The other thing, I think Slaanesh is by far the best choice out of all these.
Really?
For Swift Stride? Yeah, Swift Stride on an infantry unit is wildly powerful, I think.
I don't know. I like hatred. And the thing about stubborn, especially if you're only going to run them 5-man, like stubborn still follows the rules for fall back in good order if you're more than doubled. Like you can't, if you declare stubborn and you can't fall back in good order, you still break.
Well, no, stubborn says you automatically pass the test, right?
Yeah, I thought they didn't have to make a test. Stubborn, you choose to fall back in good order instead of taking the test. But if you cannot fall back in good order, because you're more than doubled, like choosing to automatically take fall back in good order, you break, right? Because you can't. That's how I've read it, at least.
So stubborn is the first time this unit is required to make a break test, you may choose not to and will automatically fall back in good order instead.
Oh, okay. I took
even
it as
the unit strength of the winning side is more than twice of the losing side. Specifically,
I should always read that final sentence. Because
Nothing good ever happens in the final sentence.
I've always read it as the opposite, and that makes them a lot better to me. I was always reading it as if you're more than doubled, then stubborn just doesn't work. So that's actually incredible. No, that's a lot better. Yeah.
So this unit to me, as I read out before, I think is a confidence pick. I think if you are confident that you can execute and get charges with this unit is a superstar. The fact that you can go in with min 2 attacks, possibly 4 each, and then no matter what you roll on the rampant mutation table is actually value. You're telling me you can be like 4 attacks each at AP3?
Yeah.
Because of ensorcelled weapons? Yeah. Oh, it's magic. Oh. There is no skirmishing unit. Sorry, there is also open order as well, if you didn't get that. There is no other like equivalent skirmishy 5-man thing wants anything to do with this unit at all. The issue would be is if somebody can pick this up cheaply and get, you know, just under 100 points in their pocket because they're 19 points a pop. Yep. So like they are an easy 5-wound pickup if they have the right tool for it. If they don't, this thing could be a nightmare. Anyway, moving on. Peter, your turn for a pick.
So a pick that, because I've been playing them quite a bit, or I did prior to the launch, I probably played 7 or 8 games with Warriors of Chaos, is Chosen Chaos Knights. They're expensive, but they're amazing.
So good. Holy crap.
Now, they're a 0/1 special choice, so you can only have one in your list. To run them with a 2+ armor save, which is what I feel like you're going to want to do, you do need to upgrade for a full plate and shield. So your base with full plate shield and lances paying 43 points, I believe, per model.
Yep.
But like they deliver. They've got a 2+ armor save. They got a 6+ invulnerable save. They've got counter charge, first charge. They're stubborn as well. Swift stride. They have ensorcelled weapons, so they get that additional AP when they use their hand weapons after they're done with the lance. Just like overall, they're a very strong shock troop. They do things so well. You can pay for drilled on them as well, which is incredible if you want to go with that extra mile. And if you put any character in this unit, like they will do so much work, and they're the ultimate bodyguard unit in the book, really. So
I agree. It's very interesting. So I believe this and this type of unit is something that is brand new to the fantasy, you know, the G-Dub fantasy level of game. I mean, we had Inner Circle Knights, I guess, or Cold One Knights, or whatever, Scarvet Knights, whatever they are in Lizardmen, where like they were the previous medium cav because Monster Cav were just so much better. And now G-Dub have made efforts to put something between the two, which is where this unit, Blood Knights, and a couple of others exist in the game, where they're like, we are as good as Monster Cav, but just not multi-wound, essentially. And they're freaking superstar units. They're absolute superstar units. If you can use them well, they are like no need for buff Death Star. They are just so, so strong.
Exactly.
I hate using that term as well. What do you like for marks here? What's your preference if you had one?
I almost exclusively just take Mark of Chaos Undivided so that they get that leadership reroll. I don't like Frenzy because you lose control of the unit.
Correct. It's too many points to lose control of, man.
Yeah. Tzeentch, I've tried Tzeentch because of like the sorcerer build, which we can talk about later. And it was fine. Like it doesn't do very much. It gives you magical attacks on the unit. It's more to give your sorcerers a buff than anything else. Really, to me, it's either I go Mark of Chaos Undivided because I want that leadership reroll, or Nurgle for the little bit of extra defense in close combat so I don't lose you know, one of these 43, 45 point guys to just a random slap in the face.
Exactly right. Anytime you can save even one of them, it's such a huge asset you've retained. Danny, what's your thought on the Chosen Chaos Knights?
They're fine. I think they like for the, as far as the super heavy stuff go, like cavalry, I think they're decent. I think that they're probably worse than Blood Knights. But
they're strictly worse than Blood Knights, probably, if only because they're the same point cost in Blood Knights.
Strictly worse than Blood. Like there are some situations like Chosen Chaos Knights are fine fighting a dragon, but Blood Knights don't want any part of that.
Okay, for the challenge, I guess. Yeah, that would be the one scenario, I guess. But like
that's a pretty significant scenario. We've seen a lot of dragon riders out here, man.
Like so, Blood Knights have recursion as well, right? Like
Blood Knights have extreme recursion. Yes,
exactly right. Yeah, yeah, and that is puts a little bit of over the top in the comparison, even though they have some downsides.
For sure. Like and I think
the fact that you can get 300 and some odd points Blood Knights back like every turn is pretty amazing.
Makes me sick to my stomach. Anyway, Danny, back to you. Give us a pick.
Let's see. So I would say like the next unit that I feel like I'm going to take every single game is probably Chaos Warhounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, because and tell us why. Sorry.
Yeah. So Chaos Warhounds are one of these cheap units. They're 30 points for five guys or 35 if you decide to give them Vanguard, which I totally think is a worthwhile purchase. They are War Beasts, which is a disadvantage, but mostly they're a 35 point unit with Swift Stride. I think, and they also have move through cover. I did not know that. That's amazing. All of those are great rules. They're on a smaller base, so their footprint is pretty small. It's a great unit to shove up in your opponent's face to get them to turn the direction go in the direction that you need them to go, or just to stop them from getting like an important charge off on a unit that you don't want them to.
And forgive me if I'm wrong, there's no cheaper unit in the game that's going to run in front of your knights and block up charges and shooting and stuff like that for them, is there?
I can't think of one off the top, not for 30 points.
Yeah. For what Warriors of Chaos are doing, and I believe what their best modus operandi is at the moment, as in getting stuck in and smashing through people, that requires not being annihilated by organ guns and stuff like that for possibly a turn or two. And so Chaos Warhounds just are invaluable for that, and also being the redirectors to make sure you get the charges, not your opponent. So I think that you're absolutely spot on, brother. 36 points is just bargain basement, and they are core. So you take three. You take three of these. Take three into these. No problem.
You should for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have a pick. I'm going to talk about both the chariots. They are neither of them a core, which is a little bit of a pain because you would love to have the regular Chaos Chariots as core because I think they would be a shoo-in to be taken as a two of possibly if they're in your core points. Let me just double check that's correct.
I'm glad they're not anymore. It is correct. They're not core. Correct.
Good. But for 110 points on the base chariot for a toughness 5, 4 wound, good armor save chariot, as relative to chariots, they have quite a good save.
A 3 plus armor save is incredible.
It's really good.
Absolutely. Immune to light fire. Toughness 5, 4 wounds with a 3 up, that's immune to light fire as far as I'm concerned. Unless you have poison, you're not shooting arrows and crossbows at this guy. They don't do anything. Unless you've got an absolute bucket of them. They have good weapons, halberd, especially on the charge, it's good. It's got the D6 plus one impact hits, which is very nice, and sorcered weapons, so they do have a lot more staying power, as in they're good. So one of the biggest issues I have with things like the Tomb King chariots or the Lightish chariot is that not on the charge, or if they get charged, they are very forgettable. They are not, they're a tar pit now, officially downgraded to tar pit. Whereas I think Chaos chariots have some play as if the combat does go more than one round. They stick around a lot better. They actually stop people up with that toughness 5, 3 up save. They actually can go into things that are going to wound them on 5s or 6s and just kind of hold them in place for a little bit, which I think is very good. And in more than that, they get access to the same marks. I'm not quite sure which one I would take. I haven't quite unpacked which is better for the chariot, but if either you gents know, please lay it on us.
I've used Khorne on the chariots just because it gives you like 4 attacks on those Chaos Charioteers. And they're actually pretty easy to block off with your Warhounds. Warhounds have the same speed at 7, so you use that Vanguard move to shove up, move again, and then you can keep your chariots like literally right behind them so that you block sight for that first turn while you're trying to figure out how you like where you're going to put them on turn 2.
One of the biggest reasons I liked them as well is that they're a 110-point piece with first charge.
Yes.
And you are not bringing ranks up. Warriors of Chaos just do not have a lot of ranks to get rank bonuses and things like that. You're going to get close order when you want to and stuff like that, and all your banners, whatnot. But taking away and disrupting your opponents is actually something going to be really key for Warriors of Chaos because you're never going to be able to otherwise. And so just 110 points for just here's even just one of these in my army so that when I run into an army that is just a bucket of ranks, I have the opportunity to turn them off.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think Marcus Lanesh is probably also, even though you get a leadership 8 with a reroll, that's definitely not super reliable. So I think that it's reliable, but not super reliable. So I think that's a good choice too. Khorne is definitely is not a bad choice either.
I like both. I have tried Slaanesh on the The Gorby's Chariot, the only reason being was, I think it was the Gorby's. No, it was the regular one. I did have a game where I had some really bad panics. And even with the other mark, I was just like, never again. I can't have, you know, you have that knee jerk reaction after a really bad game where you're like, this is never what I'm doing. I did have a little switch. So.
All right, we're going to do one more, and then we've got to get this. We've got to get moving. Who wants it? Who's got one on the tip of their tongue that we think people are going to need to know about? Because Warriors of Curse players are going to take these.
Well, I think. Well, there's two that I would. One of them I don't think we need to talk about because we could talk about during Beastmen, and that's Dragon Ogres, because I think they're just absolutely fantastic.
Amazing, yeah.
Like a 3+ armor save, monstrous infantry unit with 4 wounds and all the fixins is just awesome. And they've never steered me wrong. Whether you take them as 1-ofs, as 3-ofs, as 4-ofs, like I've always enjoyed their thing. The other unit that I actually have come to really enjoy is just plain old Chaos Marauders. They do a lot for their points. They've got Warband. They've got shield wall base. You can give them flails or great weapons. Both are fine depending on how you're building the rest of your army. I've always been overwhelmed with how much they've actually handled if you're willing to invest anything into them. They're generally going to be leadership 9, even without your character hanging around, at the very least, at 6 points per model. Other than they're like the cheapest thing you can take, period. And when we talk about not having hordes in a list, like this is the one unit I feel pretty comfortable taking as a horde in the book. You can spend money to make them like a 5+ armor. You can give them flails so that that first turn they're smashing something down.
Pete. By horde, you don't mean like 3x10, 30 guys in a block. You mean just like this is a unit of more than like 20, 25 guys.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can run like 20, 25, like 25 of these guys with full command, you're still only paying 170 points, and then you can add a little bit, right? Like it's like a 200 point unit that will get people stuck in, especially with like shield wall to help you. I've really enjoyed playing with them.
I think they're fantastic. I think they are for what they bring for 6 points per model. I think that's just a 6 points per model with weapon skill 4 for some reason at 6 points per model. It's just so good. Average on the initiative at 3, which is just fine, going up to 6 if they make a decent charge. Do you go any further with it? Do you go light armor shields, like do you not care? Just like bang, take the flail, 7 so
I've,
model, who cares?
I've actually been running them with light armor and shields because of shield wall. And then Warband, and then this is actually, if I'm not doing like the horse hammer Tzeentch sorcerer, I've started putting a Tzeentch sorcerer in this Marauder unit. So like they get flaming attacks out of it, but more it's so like he gives them demonology and buffs them. And they like, so that if I want to swing 10 wide with them, all of a sudden like they're hammering stuff. And I really, really enjoy it for the points. And I don't feel terrible when they die.
We're going to lay one smack down and then we're going to move on. Hell Cannon, how the mighty have fallen. And we're all happy about it. Everyone get out your little violins. It's time to talk about one of the previous absolute freaking menaces of editions gone. Now, tell us about it. Where is it at right now?
It's fucking garbage.
There's a bleep.
It is for the points, like just like the one of the most absolutely terrible things that I've ever seen in my life. It makes me sick. I tried to make it work. I was so excited about it because I wanted to have a shooting thing in my army that wasn't a Tzeentch sorcerer. I slapped that sucker in my list for probably half a dozen games. And in those half a dozen games, I think it misfired 19 times. I mean, I played 2 games with it into Danny, so he saw it happen. And I think there was probably 9 or 10 of those misfires happened in those 2 games. I think I killed 1 model in those 2 games against Danny, and overall I killed 4.
And so the one reason of them was that happens, own. Reason that happens is because a special rule called Caged Fury during the start of each turn subphase. During the start of turn subphase, if each of your turns make a leadership test for this model, if the test is failed, immediately roll in the misfire table. So if you just move your, you know, Chaos Lord on a dragon to do what it's supposed to do, because it's a Chaos Lord on the dragon and going and annihilating stuff. You are got your leadership 9, which not low, but you will fail at a quarter of the time. give or take. And you have the same chances if you're just shooting normally of misfiring as well. So when you add it up, what percentage of the time, it feels like it's almost 50% of the time, you're gonna like a 40%, 45% chance of misfiring with this thing. Because what, it's like one side of a D6 plus one quarter of the leadership tests.
Yeah, and then you play into shit like, oh, I'm so mad. You play into stuff like Tomb Kings and they skull cannon your Hell Cannon, so he's minus one leadership. Even if he's immune to psychology, it still apparently works. Or like wood elves do their bullshit minus one leadership things to you, because that also happened to me. And then you end up your leadership 8 or 7 somehow, and just every turn all you're doing is like random moving 3d6 at stuff. And I think in every one of my games before it died, it was in the middle of the table.
That's good, right? It used to be such a beast. It used to be like just like a super chariot.
Like, I mean, it's actually
got all the special rules.
It's actually fine in combat, but like people just ignore it because it, like I don't. Anyway, I hate it. I hate it. I wish it was so much better than it was.
I love it.
I hate it.
I don't think it's quite that bad, but no, I agree it's not ideal in this army.
Like, I think if it had random movement 3d6 that you could choose to use so that you got to pick when it decided to go bananas and kill things, I would like it more, because I would use it more as like a souped up snotling pump wagon, I think, to be fair.
Yeah.
Because it does have a great stat line, but man, most of the time.
So instead, the Cage Fury would be if it did not move. You have to make a leadership test or roll a misfire. So if you decided just send it on in because you didn't care about the shooting, or if it shot once, or if you take it and it shoots once per game, you're stoked. The rest of the time it's just going to go smash. Yeah, I think that'd make a lot more sense.
It's just so disappointing.
Anyway, we're going to move on.
15 points. Take anything else.
All right. We should start a segment. Hot takes. Peter's hot takes. Who does Peter hate today? What's Peter hating on?
If it was a 5-inch blast, also, I'd at least try.
A strength 5-inch blast. Yeah,
that does D3 damage on not the center.
Your way for that.
I'm getting a little overboard here, but I have had such a terrible time using that model that like this is what I want now to make it acceptable. Anyway,
I love it. Anyway, all right, we're into the Gifts of Chaos, the first of which is Dark Majesty, 50 points. And this is, you know, like we did with the Chaos, like we've done with the Magic Armors last week, like we did with the spells, we're going to read these things out. These other two miscreants are going to read out the flavor text. I can already tell you that. It's going to cause me internal pain and distress, and I'm just going to have to deal with that. But Dark Majesty is 50 points, like I said. And these are pretty much, you can take, is this one of these, one per army, one per character? Is that correct?
Yeah, it can only be chosen once per army.
Correct. Once per army. So unless this character is fleeing, any enemy units that are required to make a fear or terror test whilst this character is within, so whilst they are in command range of this character, must do so with additional -1 to his leadership characteristic to a minimum of leadership 2. For 50 points, that seems like a lot. For 50 points to be just a -1 modifier to only fear and terror, not general leadership tests as well, which I would have preferred for 50 points. How do you feel about it, lads?
Not good.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot in a very elite army to begin with in most of your builds. Mm-hmm. It's hard to sacrifice another 50 points.
And like, there's a decent amount of fear in this army, but not a lot of fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's builds you could do, I guess, but it's...
Right.
Yeah, not for me.
Yeah. So get for me, so does the dragon cause terror? Yeah.
Oh yeah. The dragon causes terror. The chimeras, which are actually, we didn't talk about them, but they're actually not terrible for 180 points, also cause terror. There's a few terror causing things, and there's some fear, but
I could see a world where everyone is just taking dragons and you're like, well, lol, I'm going to make you take a terror test and -1 to charge my dragon now that I've eaten some scraps in the middle. And then they fail and lol, my dragon charges you because I took Dark Majesty.
I don't see that world. Don't do it.
Me either. It's not a good world.
Don't do it.
Danny, you go first, and then we'll go with Peter after that, and we'll start the rotation.
So we have Demon Flesh for 45 points. This character cannot be wounded by a wound roll of 2, regardless of the strength of the attack. So minimum 3+ to wound this particular character.
45 points, though.
That is a lot of points for this ability. Most of your characters are like toughness 5.
Well, the lords are. These lords and aspiring champions are 5.
Yeah, I don't see it. I'd pay 20. Maybe I paid 20, 25 for this. 45, nah.
Or exalted champion, I should say.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm like a demon prince, but then like that would be the best thing I could take it on, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, and it might hold weight there.
But I probably wouldn't take a demon prince, so there's that.
Yeah, I also... yeah. I mean, the cool thing about a demon prince is like you can make a pretty cool demon prince with a 4-up, and it comes base with a 4-up ward save. But I just think a Chaos Lord and a Sorcerer is better. Or just a Chaos Lord.
He can join units now, which is nice.
Yep. It's not for me. I mean, I'll probably try it someday, but not today.
All right, next up.
Extra Arm. Gifted with an extra arm, the champion rains many blows upon their enemies. This is 40 points, and it gives you +1 to attacks, but not on your mount.
Yeah,
40 points. Your horse doesn't get an extra arm. I wish it did, because you could model some pretty cool shit. But, nope, just your dude.
Yeah, 40 points. I'm not here for it.
Yep, same. That's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. 25 points, one more attack. Consider it. Probably still wouldn't do it.
Yep. Diabolic Splendor for 35. Any enemy model that targets this character or any unit they have joined during the shooting phase suffers an additional -1 to hit modifier. I actually don't mind this one. So this is the first one that I read out of these where I'm like, I could see that. Like you have a sorcerer on a mount in a unit of, you know, a unit of cavalry and just like, well, I just want to, that thing, the whole unit's now -1 to hit. That just seems good. You put something in front of it so they got light cover and they're -2 to hit and you are, you know, everything that would hit you on a 4, maybe a long range and they hit you on a 7, that's really good. That can be really good, just having an innate -1. So, but 35, once again, is a little on the steep side, but this is I would consider this in the right build.
Especially like depending on how the meta goes or the meta in your area, if you play into a lot of wood elves or lizardmen or even dwarves, armies that have a lot of, you know, ballistic skill, they're going to be trying to pump into you. That -1 goes a long way into poison builds and others to just keep you alive. And once again, like that 35 points, if it saves you a 45 point chaos, like Chosen Chaos Knight, you got the points back just from that, right? So
100%.
The reason I think this is really good, and this is something that's different than all the items that we've looked at so far, is it affects not only the bearer, but also his unit. So it's like a huge value add for 35 points.
Correct. Spot on, brother. Keep it going, Danny. This next one's yours.
Sure. So we got another great one here. We have the Enchanting Aura for 35 points. Enemy units engaged in combat with this character cannot use the Strike's First Special Rule. Enemy models that do not have the Strike's First Special Rule become subject to the Strike's Last Special Rule instead.
Holy crap.
Amazing.
It's great.
Incredible. This is my auto take so far. Like this is the one that I will be like, I'm going to take this until it's proven to be bad because I'm not convinced it can be, especially like, oh man, like, oh, never mind. The only discussion is where does it go? My gut says an aspiring champion, maybe the BSB, but I think it's up for debate. What do you guys think?
Oh yeah. I've taken it in almost every one of my lists. I usually put it on an aspiring champion that I'm putting either into a unit of knights, but more often I'm putting it into that like marauder block I've started to take.
Yeah.
Because the marauders are a little less likely to top out my opponent's initiative anyway, whereas I found often with the knights I was already going to beat them on initiative, so it didn't matter. They always strike last in a lot of cases. But I've love it. I think it's a great pick in most lists if you want to throw it on your BSB or a sorcerer or something and go to town.
I think it's a big value add for units on foot.
Yep.
Like, so I really like it on a block of Nurgle warriors with like halberds, or Slaanesh warriors with halberds would be good too, because they get +1 initiative to take them to 5. And at best your opponent's going to be 4 when they charge them. So, sorry.
Don't mean to cut you off, but, marauders with great weapons, that are Slaanesh with this in it is great. Cause you survive that first turn. And then after that, you're topping almost anything that's not an elf out. You're always going to be like initiative 2 to their 1.
True. Yeah, that is big actually. Because if we go into great weapon meta, like if your meta is just lol, every model, everything all the time has a great weapon, that is such a good counter pick.
Yeah, Sinesh only work is the same as Elven Reflexes though, so it only works in the first round of combat.
The first round of combat. All right. Peter, you're up next.
Aura of Pain, the champion's damned form. Exudes an aura of pain which racks their enemies with crippling agony. Once per game, when this character's combat is chosen during step 1.1 of the choose and fight combat subphase, a single enemy unit they are engaged with suffers d6 strength 3 hits with no armor save or regeneration save permitted. Ward saves can be used as normal.
30 points. Essentially, this is an old school breath weapon. Once per game breath weapon is what I conjured it as. Is there any good, Peter?
So I wouldn't take it.
Me either.
Like in a situation,
it's not bad.
Like, right. It's like, here's the edge case, right? Like this is a thing that you get to use. So it goes before enemies get to fight. You do D6 strength 3 hits with no armor save. And it goes before, like when you get charged.
Yeah.
But I'd rather spend 5 more points and just have Enchanting Aura instead all 100%. The time and not once per game.
What I do like this about this is exactly what you said, Danny. This has a chance to kind of compromise a front rank that's going to hit before you do, before they go in. And so if we had like a really prevalent elf meta, this could be a thing, being like, you know, okay, cool, I get to at least knock out a couple of attacks once per game.
Swordmaster's is one weird trick, right?
Yeah. But the fact is that you can still roll a 1 on the amount of attacks. I wish this was D3 plus 3 or even D6 plus 1. The fact that you can still roll a 1 on this for 30 points, that sucks. That sucks so much to me.
Yeah, you could also use it on like a challenge character where your whole point is like you're just trying to win a challenge, but I still think it's too expensive.
All right. Master of Mortals is 25 points. Unless this character is fleeing, friendly units of Chaos Marauders and Marauder Horsemen gain a +1 modifier to their leadership characteristic whilst they're within this character's command range to a minimum of 10. So this would be another way to get a little bit of a general buff for, and especially if you are playing that that Peter mentioned before. So if you were playing Marauder Heavy, I think this is a pretty good pick. But apart from that, I'd probably leave it at home.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool on like maybe a sorcerer or something like that that's away from your general to give the marauders that's close to him like leadership like
10
or a little bit higher. But yeah, I agree.
Unless you're playing that skew, unless you've got like probably 600, 700 points plus of marauders to give this buff to, yeah, I probably wouldn't bother. Danny, up next.
So we have Acid Ichor for 15 points. For every wound this character loses during a challenge, their enemy suffers a strength 4 hit with an AP of -2. I think it's okay on the dragon.
Yeah.
Yep. But otherwise, I probably wouldn't take it.
Yep. I like it on the dragon because you're sitting on 10 wounds anyway. And maybe people are
like, because he's got 8, like Chaos Lord on the Manticore.
Yeah. Yep. Wounds. 8 wounds. Yeah, and you're going to have a 2 up armor save. And, it's just it ends challenges quickly for you. It's it adds stuff up. It's great. It's not an auto take, like you don't need it, but if that's kind of like the meta that you're in where you're struggling with challenges, it's gonna do work for you, right? Mm-hmm. And 15 points, it's not terrible, it's not breaking the bank.
Yep. Agreed. It is in the realm of I've got 20 points left. I'm gonna chuck a shield here and take Acid Ichor. Yeah. Last one, Peter.
Poisonous slime. The champion's flesh is saturated with a toxic slime that seeps from their skin, poisoning anything it touches. Gives your character poisoned attacks, but not the mount.
This is totally fine as well, right?
I don't know.
Okay. So this is cool because it's 15 points, so it fits with Diabolic Splendor and Enchanting Aura on all your characters in the army, right? Like you can combine it with either of those other items.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's fine.
Okay. I think it's totally fine. Totally fine. Totally acceptable. Once again, 15 points left, or exactly to your point, because most of them get the Lord Level characters get 50 points to spend on these things. So yeah, they pair up very nicely in some ways. All right, onto the magic items. First of which is the Demon Sword. 75 points. It is combat weapon, of course. It is strength plus D3. neg two always, and then special rules are extra attacks, D3, magical attacks, and strikes first. And every natural roll of a one made when rolling to hit with this weapon results in a hit, which must be resolved against the unit the wielder has joined, rather than the enemy. If the wielder has not joined a unit, it's resolved against the wielder. Never take this.
It's a really good sword.
If you told me I could pay 75 points for plus 3 strength, plus 3 attacks, and those terms and conditions, abso-freaking-lutely. But if it's plus 1 strength, plus 1 attack for 75 points, which, you know, it's going to be 1/3 of the time, and then when you got, you know, you roll in your 5 dice to hit and you got 3 ones, and you're like, ooh, me, oh my, I have regrets. But I would never take this because it's 75 points and it's not consistent. But that's me. That's my filth. Tell me why you guys think it's good.
I don't think it's good, but it's cool.
It is.
Oh, cool. It's cool. Phil.
It's cool. For sure some style points by taking this thing,
and
right?
And like our last episode, I talked a little bit about how I kind of really enjoyed Paymaster's Coin. It's for this stuff that I enjoy Paymaster's Coin. Because I was using it with the Scimitar of Sun Resplendent for Lizardmen, which is another, you get D3 extra attacks, but you don't get strikes first and all this other stuff. So you just kind of put it on your missile Chaos Lord, which don't, because like he's so expensive. But if you did, or I guess your Demon Prince, Paymaster Coin, so you just theoretically don't roll ones that first round of combat and you kill 9 guys. That's cool. Like there's better builds, but still, like if for style points, like I said, like that first combat you do, you will kill a lot of stuff.
Fair.
Nobody wants to fight this guy.
No.
It's true. But then when you get charged by this guy and he rolls the ones, you're like, what was I afraid of?
Hey, Master's Coin. You just have to have one good turn. Break their fights back.
Fights first is genuinely good as well. I gotta say, fights first is good. But 75, man, there's a lot of other stuff.
Is a lot to have that drawback.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I would like to take for the 100 points that I have on these Lord level characters. Who are the only ones who can take this stuff? And something this inconsistent, it's a hard sell for me. You know, especially when they can just be the literal incarnation of stop hitting yourself.
Yeah. If only the sorcerers could take illusion magic, I would be all over
this.
Oh
my God.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, baby. You would, wouldn't you? Danny, you're up next.
So we have the Chaos Runesword for 45 points. The Chaos Runesword is a close combat weapon that gives plus 1 strength, minus 1 AP, and has the magic attack special rule. However, it also gives a plus 1 modifier to weapon skill and initiative. It's for 45. It's a lot of stat bonuses, although your initiative and weapon skill are probably really high on your characters anyway. So, and AP minus 1, that's the thing that sticks with me on most of the magic weapons in the game. AP minus 1 is just probably not enough by itself.
Are you saying that because there's just too many 2 or 3 plus armor save characters running around? Because AP minus 1 is perfectly acceptable for going through most units in the game, but getting stuck in the challenge when they have a 2 plus and you have neg 1 is just not the right place to be, yeah?
It's scary, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this does buff your Chaos Lord to weapon skill 8, which is a decent breakpoint for nothing. on an exalted champion, it gets it to 7, which is good because now your weapon skill 3 guys that you're fighting against are hitting you on 5s and you're hitting them on 2s.
I just think 45 points was too much.
It's fine. I wouldn't take it. I don't think.
Totally fine. Easy done. Moving on then. PD baby, you're next.
The filth mace. This heavy headed and rust-encrusted mace endlessly oozes a necrotic slime which can sap the strength and vitality of the strongest warriors, causing even minor wounds to become debilitating. Filth mace is a combat weapon with a strength of plus 1, an AP of minus 1. It gives you magical attacks. And any enemy model that suffers 1 or more unsaved wounds from the filth mace must immediately make a toughness test. If it's failed, the wounded model suffers a minus 1 modifier to its toughness characteristic until the end of the turn, to a minimum of 1.
Really weird. You've already hit them. The minus 1 toughness doesn't matter. When is that going to come up again between then and the end of the turn?
For your buddies.
Your buddies hitting that, also hitting that dragon.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, cool. Because are you going to win the dragon with your strength plus one? yeah, I have issues with this. The T's and C's on the bonuses just don't make sense to me. If it was minus one toughness to the end of the game or until the start of your next turn or whatnot or anything like that, but just till the end of the next turn, there's just so few opportunities to take advantage of it. It's a little frustrating to me. And for 40 points, I would hope for a little bit better. You guys feel the same?
Yeah, it's really bad.
I would never take this in my life.
Never in a million years.
If you gave me a list and said you have to run this list and it had the Filth Mace in it, I would throw up in front of you. I would be so upset.
You would filth on them.
Yeah.
In lieu of the Filth
Mace. I cannot.
The description is very sexual, though.
It was pretty sexual.
I gave it up to the writers here. It was great. Easy.
Spell Thieving Sword is up next, 20 points. It is cost, you know, as a combat, it is a sword. Strength user, AP negative one, magical attacks. Any enemy wizard that suffers one or more unsaved wounds from the Spell Thieving Sword immediately forgets a single spell, determined at random for the remainder of the game. I can see some very niche applications here, like you put a character on a mount and you just yeet them into their level four and just try and, you know, with higher initiative, just try and whack off a couple of magic levels. Or you could just do the same thing and kill them instead. In which case, who cares if they've forgotten their spells? They've technically forgotten all their spells as well as all their wounds. And your Warriors of Chaos, you can totally execute that if you wanted to. Like, you know, where some Bretonians have like a peg lord that could just go and do that job. You can totally do that. So I'm of the opinion, why would you wound what you can kill and probably don't take this? You guys feel differently?
Yeah, I think your niche case is kind of the way that this becomes useful. And that's like, in a world where casters on big mounts become very popular, I could see this being a thing you might want to take.
Yeah. Hierophant on that dragon, you mean, stuff like that?
Yeah. The things that I don't think will become big, but you never know, like how the meta ends up shaking out. Like that, I see as a decent reason to field this. But otherwise, like right now, I would always just gloss over it in terms of making a list.
Right. So this thing has like, it kind of resembles like the old Greedy Fist.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that was good because it didn't require you to get an unsaved wound through, right? It was just if you did a wound to them, they
walked
the spell. And so the fact that like you also have to do damage for them to lose a spell. I don't know. Just I'm kill very disappointed in this.
If they're not on a mount or a dragon, they've probably got three wounds, which means you have to do like, if you do one wound, you have a 1 in 4 chance of getting rid of the spell you probably want to get rid of. Who cares? You can do two wounds and get rid of two spells, or you can just try and do three wounds and kill the bastard. And who cares? Like,
you get rid of all of his spells all at the same time.
All the spells. Who would have thought? Turns out they've forgotten all of them. They're also dead, and you have their points. So yeah, that's my opinion. There is a very specific meta that you may exist in where this becomes good, or we start seeing, you know, other people have demon princes or stuff like that who are level fours, or you know, vampire lords, etc., whatever. But at the moment, I think it doesn't hold enough weight. All right, we're into magic armors. Danny, take it away.
Okay, so the first magic armor that we have is Armor of the Damned, which costs a mighty 70 points. It's full plate mail that during the combat phase, your opponent has to reroll to hit rolls against the wearer.
Okay.
It's cool.
It is cool.
Yeah, like I don't know that it's as good. Like, okay, so Armor of the Damned is neat on like a big monster or something like that, something with a lot of wounds that like your opponent is going to have to put a lot of resources into trying to kill, especially since it's going to have also a high weapon skill. So they're probably going to be hitting on fours or fives. But it's also only in combat.
Yeah. And it's the same points as the Armor of Destiny, which is just better resilience, like undoubtedly, but just better resilience.
It's probably about the same. It's might be better.
You get full armor out of this versus heavy armor.
Well, the fact is that the Armor of Destiny works against shooting is what we're getting at.
Sure.
Whereas this is literally just combat. So you're getting shot by a cannon? This does 1% of the zero. Yeah. For the same 70 points.
No argument.
I do see the case for this on a non-mounted lord. Because for this exactly the same reason, you just challenge out someone else's challenge beast and you're like, you're going to hit me on fours re-rolling. You go four attacks, two hits, turns into one hit, and who cares? You did nothing. And that, for that kind of thing, I actually don't mind this. But once again, that's 70 points, and that guy's probably just has a great weapon apart from this. Although you could take a shield and just be like, lol, two up, I guess.
Three up.
Apologies. Sorry. Old hammer.
You're good.
Peter, take it away.
The crimson armor of Dargen. The rich crimson metal of this armor flares into a storm of blood-colored light when its wearer wills it, dazzling those who would strike a mortal blow. Models whose troop type is infantry or cavalry only. The crimson armor of Dargen is a suit of heavy armor. In addition, the wearer is immune to multiple wounds X, and if the wearer suffers an unsaved wound from an attack with the special rule, they will only ever lose a single wound.
And?
And that's it. You're immune to multiple wounds. You can only ever take one wound. If you could take it on a monster, I would love it. Ish. Love adjacent it. The fact that you can only take it on like infantry or cavalry, it's a little less appealing to me. It's okay. Like, I don't think it's bad by any means.
Go ahead, Adam.
Nah, I'm not.
Okay. So comparing this to all the Bretonian items that also give you like ignores killing blow makes it feel a lot less good. Although comparing items across armies is probably not a worthwhile endeavor.
Yeah, because then you go into say like, what about the armor of Kalidor then, or whatever, right?
So, it's also just heavy armor and not full plate. So that's kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm. It might be cool, like on a demonic mount, maybe. That would be my edge case, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of what was going through my head. Is like, but even then, your Chaos Lord is now at a 3+ instead of a 2+, because I believe the demonic mount. Yeah,
4.
Yeah, it's a 4+ because he doesn't have barding. Ugh. Or armored hide. Yeah, don't do it.
Sad. Question for you, and this is going backwards, which we don't like doing. Armor of the Damned. Can you take full plate on a Demon Prince? Because the guy already has a 4+ ward, so Armor of Destiny argument doesn't hold weight, and that guy has a very nice, very fat weapon skill to already get goods out of it. You're having to re-roll to hit. So
he only has the option to buy heavy armor.
Okay, so that means he wouldn't be able to take this, right? Because he can't buy full plate? Or right. Does that mean
in theory, yes, correct.
Okay, never mind. Because that on a Demon Prince would be sick.
Yeah, okay, right. I'm back in on that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, Talismans, Crown of Everlasting Conquest for 40 points. The wearer of the Crown of Everlasting Conquest gains the Regeneration 5+ special rule. Mm-hmm. That is, for 40 points, that is probably about how much you should pay for that. Just
in
take
chaos, yes.
Yeah, yeah, a third less of stuff. How do we feel about it? I think it is, once again, Demon Prince who already has a ward save. You don't really, just giving it the third save. Also on the Chaos Dragon, that's cool, just giving it that third save. As long as you're able to give it a 5+ some,
All of the characters in Warriors of Chaos have a 5+ invuln.
Yeah,
so,
correct.
This is great. I mean, there's a reason why it's 40 points, whereas in other books, it's 20 or like 25. Yeah. Or there's a different buff associated with it. It's because like all your characters already have a 5+ ward. They're generally rocking at the worst also a 5+ armor or better. But Crown of Everlasting Conquest is absolutely fantastic. And if you're running a Chaos Dragon or your Chaos Lord on basically anything, like you almost automatically slot this 40 points aside for it. So,
yep, totally agree. What's next?
Brazen Collar for 20 points. This is a common item, so you can take it more than once. The wearer of a Brazen Collar has magic resistance 2. Probably you wouldn't magic resist this into your army list.
Well, if you are taking a huge unit of chosen knights, maybe you just want to give them the insulation. Yeah. But yeah, that's the only case I see.
You know, it's cool because it's cheap too. You could put it on a champion, which isn't
terrible. That's what I thought. Just put it on a champ for a bit more protection against some of the nonsense that could be coming your way and, you know, magic missile builds, etc. All right, into the magic standards, Peter.
The Banner of the Gods. Forged in the red-lit depths of Zarnagrand, the banner of the gods induces dread in the enemy and unshakable courage in the servants of chaos.
Oh, man.
A unit carrying the banner of the gods ignores all negative modifiers to the leadership characteristic.
I do... You like you have laid the standard out there for all Warriors to Curse players out there. Now we're talking about magic standards, but they must say it like that now, right?
Yeah,
they have to.
If you
what, how was it? How was it? Gods,
you have to say it like that.
You just said it. You didn't do it. You just said it. You didn't do it. The spell is broken.
Adam, that's
the spell is broken. Nah, it's over.
Banner of the gods.
Thank you.
They're actually, and look, I haven't passed the bar yet, but like, you know, I'm pretty sure that they're legally required to do that now from now on.
Yeah, because I said it like that.
Yep.
But yeah, Banner of the Gods is 75 points. It's actually a pretty cool ability, but it's 75 points.
Yeah, because it's pseudo stubborn, I guess. You can look at it like that. Old school stubborn, not current stubborn. Whereas like you just never not just roll in that leadership probably 9 or 10.
Yeah, basically. I mean, as long as you can keep rolling your leadership, you don't get pushed back. Or you just get pushed back. Like, so you're never going to fall back in good order unless you want to because you're actually stubborn.
Once again, I'm just looking for pro. I look at Warriors of Chaos, and we'll talk about this more in part two. The mindset must be proactive. Like, I don't plan to lose combats. I don't plan to have to take a leadership test.
That's freaking nonsense. Lose the combat with Warriors, dude. Like, come on.
Nonsense. Also,
I think that you're doing it wrong.
There's something.
Yeah, so I don't see why. I wouldn't take this.
Sorry, guys. I think there's something that says that break tests aren't considered leadership tests, right?
Oh. So
does this impact break tests anyway?
It's leadership characteristic, not test.
Test. So I'd say it would. At least I hope so. If it's not, it's dead on arrival. Absolutely dead on arrival. Yeah. Anyway, next up is the Doom Totem, which is 65 points. All enemy units that can draw line of sight, no range, line of sight, whole table. To the model carrying the Doom Totem suffers a -1 modifier to their leadership characteristic. For 65 points, just like the whole table is -1. It's kind of hilarious. I'm not sure if it's worth it for 65, but it's... Oh.
Sorry.
I wish there was a... Sorry?
So yeah, this wouldn't... like because the combat res doesn't modify the unit leadership characteristic, right? Just rereading break tests just to be sure. So, like, if you have things that modify your leadership, this is great. But yeah, it doesn't really impact break tests unless that's in the case, right? Just from reading this, because the break test is modified by combat result. Your leadership isn't.
So it's dead on arrival. Never take it.
On the other hand, the Doom Totem. I'm very pro Doom Totem.
I am pro Doom Totem.
Me too. I wish there was a shooting build to just be like you're standing there essentially with your kilt up. Being like his while you make people take 25% or you know below 25% break tests at -1 on the entire table, I love the idea of that. As it is, I still think it's sick. I'm not quite sure where you fit it in because 65 points going to be taken by a BSB, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it has to be on your BSB. So your BSB has to be visible to the enemy. Has to be in line of sight of relevant units. Has to essentially be at the coalface, so to speak. You know, right in the mix of things, which is where they want to be anyway. But it does kind of force you into a certain direction with that unit to get the most out of this 65 point upgrade. Yeah, not in,
the other, got any other. Oh, go ahead. Yep. I'm sorry.
No go.
I was going to say the other really important thing. There's a lot of abilities that key off of using your own leadership to do something like raising undead models or my will be done and that kind of stuff. And this will affect those, which I think is a pretty big play for a lot of those armies because those are extremely powerful abilities.
Yeah, snap. I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely right. This is just a counter meta pick for a lot of those resurrection forces. That's really sick. Peter, any other applications?
I'm just looking to see who you like, if you put this on your BSB and gave him Aura of Dark Majesty, like,
is there a combo?
Where's the combo there? Is there a combo there? Like what unit could you put him in? Cause you couldn't, if you have a way to also give your unit terror, then it's actually kind of cool because it's -2.
I was thinking to put him on a Manticore, but he can't go on.
You can't. No, that was the first thing I double checked because, all of the terror causers are Chaos Lord only. And all the fear stuff for these guys, like, I don't think there's anything.
Is there a sword that causes terror?
No. We just covered them, Danny. Oh my God.
Danny. There might be some way out there to jank yourself some.
I mean, you could still do it with like the Aura of Dark Majesty on a different character with your BSB having this and then Terror Bomb, because you can field a Chaos Dragon and like two Chimeras in a list and still have a decent amount of points left over for other stuff. And then just kind of go with this, like, I'm going to -2 leadership, -1 leadership, a bunch of different guys, Terror Bomb off the board, which might be cute. So
I agree.
But it's a very good banner regardless.
It is.
Yeah, the only impediment is it having to be on your BSB for doing 65 points, which kind of forces you into some archetypes and some builds. And also, at 65 points, it forces you to try and invest other things into getting something out of it. And then before you know it, you've put 300 points into trying to make the Doom Totem worth taking. And you're like, okay, is that worth the squeeze?
So you can put it on Chosen and Chosen Knights as well.
Oh, really? That can take 65?
Yes, because they can go to
sick.
They can go crazy. They're just like Temple Guard for Lizardmen. Yeah.
That's you can very spend good to points, know. They'll let you do it.
Fair enough. Danny.
All right, so the next banner we have is the Blasted Standard. A unit carrying the Blasted Standard may reroll any rolls of a natural one when making an armor save roll against wounds suffered in the shooting phase. It is very medium.
It is very medium.
So
I have a little build with five regular Chaos Knights.
Yeah.
And a level 4 in it with the -1 to hit and the Blaster Standard. So it's just 5 ablative wounds with a good armor save for your level 4. That makes your level 4 extremely quick on a mount. And then the unit is -1 to hit and really ones for saves. Because most of the missile shooting is -1, -2 at absolute freaking best. And so you can be taking 4 up to rolling ones, 3 up to rolling ones, and be -1 to hit. And that's the only combo that I see for this.
Yeah, I've run it on Chosen Chaos Knights as well, just for that. Like, I don't want to lose a 45 point model if I can afford it. But it is very mid. Like, it's not. Not like an auto take. It's
10. It's 10 points too much for me. I wish this was in the 30 point bracket. Anyway, Peter, give us the last banner.
The Banner of Rage, sewn from strings of congealed gore. That sounds awful. This banner radiates a bloodlust so strong that those beneath it are goaded into a state of permanent rage. Just like, think about that. Like, they sewed from just like congealed blood. This is just a blood sausage banner.
Can you imagine
called how it much the blood sausage banner? Like?
The haggis banner.
Yeah. Blood sausage banner. A unit carrying the banner of blood sausages gains the frenzy special rule. However, unlike other frenzied units, this unit cannot lose this special rule.
Sick. 35, it's fine.
I like frenzy on some things. I don't like it on a lot of things. But it's
cool. You want this on a medium-sized unit that you want to take over a breakpoint of deadliness, I guess. Although giving frenzy to like a decent unit of Forsaken, and then they're like furious charging at +2/+2 D3 attacks each. That's kind of sexy.
You can't, Adam. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Why?
Because they're loners. I know.
Damn weebs.
I like it on Foot Warriors.
One and all. Never mind. Yeah, Foot Warriors. It would be the next one. Or just a regular unit of Knights or other Cav. Big unit of Marauder Cav, maybe. I don't know. Nah, probably not, actually.
The nice thing is you can give them the banner and then also give them a mark. So if you want something different than Khorne but want the Khorne effect, this is a good way to do it.
All right, enchanted items up next. Pendant of Damnation, 30 points. Models who have the troop type of infantry or cavalry only. The bearer of the Pendant of Damnation gains a +1 modifier to their attacks characteristic for every wound they lose. Naturally, what the most you can have on these guys is 4 when they're not on a mount, Chaos Lords on foot have 4, So the best you're going to do is +3 attacks for 30 points. I mean, you are pretty durable innately, and you can give yourself, of course, you have a couple of different saves. You can have a 3+, 5+, 5+ if you take the crown as well with this. So then you're kind of likely not dying in one tap, but you will take some wounds. So maybe this is okay, but
I think this is like for your demonic mount, maybe, because like that has 5 wounds.
Yeah, 5 wounds.
On a demonic mount. Mm. So you can get up to an extra +4, which is not terrible. It's a lot of attacks because their base, 6-5 to begin with. You're kind of maxing out your attacks pretty easily, especially if your Gaze of the Gods goes off even once. It's pretty swell.
Yeah, I think it's 30 points. I think it's totally fine. I'm totally acceptable for you to take. Once again, I prefer a more proactive approach. Like,
exactly.
Why am I taking wounds? What have I done wrong in this life to be struck by this peasantry?
Don't do it.
Let's just go kill
just
them.
Just don't take wounds.
But yeah, totally fine. Just don't take
guys, wounds.
Just
stop taking wounds.
Yeah.
The reason why you're losing your games is because you've taken wounds.
Yeah.
Danny, take it away.
Take a lot less wounds. That's my coaching advice.
Yep.
Helm of Many Eyes is a 20-point enchanted item. The Helm of Many Eyes gives its wearer, but not their mount, the strike's first special roll. However, they are also stupid.
So they get flights first and stupidity for 20 points. It giveth and it taketh away. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about it?
It's like it used to be a staple, right? Like you'd see this, and this item has not changed since like 8th edition or 7th edition. Like it's basically exactly the same as it always has been. Your leadership value was pretty decent. I think it's okay. But then again, like stupidity is so random. I don't know. I feel like it's okay if you have the 20 points, but I don't think it's like a gimme or anything. I think it's fine at best.
I have a general philosophy in that the upside has to be at least twice as good as the downside. If I'm willing to take any downsides when I pay points, I hate paying points for downsides, for any downside. I'm paying points here. It should only be upsides. And so the downside needs to be twice as bad as the upside. And this I do not think. I think stupidity is so bad that these are almost one for one. Therefore, I probably wouldn't take this. But if you like it, you go for it.
If you could do a BSB reroll on stupidity, I would take it 100%. A lot more.
Exactly. That's the only, that is what has changed from 8th edition to now, right? Stupidity was very mitigatable. Like it was a 10 rerollable. Who gave us stuff? It never happened. Unless you were orcs. And you know, and you had 30 trolls, and then you had a horde of trolls. And if you had a horde of trolls, 100% of the time, every game you would fail stupidity. It was guaranteed. It was the rules. It was the rules of the unit. Anyway, Peter, favor of the gods.
This is a common magic item. Favor of the gods, 5 points. The champion bears an obsidian pendant that marks them as having truly earned the favor of the gods. Single use, the bearer of the favor of the gods may reroll the d6 when rolling on the gaze of the gods table. I love it. I absolutely love it.
It's common, right?
It's a common item.
If you have five points,
because so the gaze of the gods table, we'll cover it in a minute. It's really great. But if you roll one on it more than once, you gain stupidity. You gain stupidity, then you start losing leadership. Your leadership drops by one every time you roll a one after that. So it's real. It's if you're going to gamble on Gaze of the Gods every turn, Favor of the Gods is just keeping you probably from ending up stupid or with like trash tier leadership.
Insurance. I call it 5 points for 5 points for insurance in this game. And
the Gaze of the Gods table is fucking fantastic.
Really good. There's your second one, Peter. It's fair.
I've said like six. I'm just hoping. Dickie's really paying attention to this one.
All right. Arcane items are up next. Skull of Catan, 60 points. The bearer of the Skull of Catan and any other wizards within 3, friend or foe, may apply a +1 modifier to any casting result they make. Note that this modifier is to the result of the roll and does not negate the roll of a natural 1 or natural doubles. So within 3 inches is very small. Mm-hmm. Like it's actually even going to be hard for you to do that with your own units unless they're in the same unit, but it is doable. But 60 points for +1 to cast, I don't know if I love it for 60 points. For a +1. I'm trying to equate this in my head.
This in like one particular build, and that's like a multi-sorcerer build where you put all 3 of them in like a unit of Chaos Knights Chaos Marauder Horsemen. So they're pretty mobile. And then you're just like, my level 4 is we give the Mark of Zinch. My level 4 is technically now casting on a +6 and my level 2s are casting on a +4, both of them.
Mm. That's pretty sick.
That's kind of where I would take it. But now you're putting like an additional 400 points minimum into a, like, or 500 points into like a
this is what I mean.
Chaos Knight unit to do it. But it's like, like it begins to add up the more sorcerers you can kind of roll together into a tiny little burrito.
So. This is what I mean about some of these items, like the Doom Totem, where you pay enough points for the item that you feel like you have to invest in what it's giving you, and all of a sudden you spend 400 points on, essentially you spend 400 points on the item, because the item is the thing that caused the pebble that caused the snowball that now caused you to waste half the points in your army.
Now, all that said,
still not bad though.
I know we don't like comparing, but like most plus one casting items in the game are pretty expensive. Like a 60 really point is. With a negative that's like very situational, it's still not a terrible choice. Like if you're going heavy on casting, even if you're only giving it to like one or two casters.
Well, that's the thing, right? If you spend 60 points on this, and this is exactly what I meant. If you spend 60 points on this, you want to be giving this buff to at least one, if not two other of your own casters. And then, yeah, like you said, you're 400 points in the hole for a 60 point magic item. Still not saying it's bad, because that build is actually kind of sick.
A plus six to cast is no joke, right?
So. You just have one unit that is crazy, crazy good. All right, Danny, take it away.
All right, so we have the best magic item in the book here, Infernal Puppet.
Son of a bitch.
Unless the owner of the Infernal Puppet is fleeing or engaged in combat, they may use it whenever an enemy user that is within 24 inches of them makes a casting roll. If they do so, the enemy wizard must roll an extra d6 and discard the highest result. I think this is like...
I love it.
You should always take this.
So this is great, except it never works for me.
It never works for Peter.
As Danny knows, and I played a lot of games with this outside of Danny's, I think it caused Danny to fail one magic cast, and it was just like extra work to remember it in those games as we were just kind of learning the game. And I maybe in the five or six games I ran this thing had it cause like 2-3 casts ago. Because a lot of guys, especially early on, are going to be running level fours with some other way to buff. Yeah. So they're casting on a plus five or plus six anyway. It's definitely a perfectly good magic item, but man, has it been awful for me. Like on paper, it should be great. And then it just isn't, because there's a lot of plus five and plus six casts going around, or even higher if you're crazy into sacking wounds where you're Doom Kings. So.
Yeah, I think this is a meta pick. And in the right meta, this thing is absolutely incredible. But then, you know, it is, like you said, it's subject to high rolling. Like, oh, cool, my opponent just rolled good and it didn't do anything for 50 points.
Sure, but the statistical, like, average, like averaged out amongst five games or however many games you're going to play in an event, like, it's going to cause miscasts.
True. Yeah.
And there's no line of sight requirement.
The line, no line of sight is great. 24 inches is cool. I just wish it was better for me.
I love it. I think it's sick.
That's my selfishness.
You're so selfish. This is amazing. Yeah, if I was going to a five-round event and I was playing Warriors of Chaos, it would be difficult for me not to take this. All right, last one, Spell Familiar. Sorry, Peter, this is yours.
Spell Familiar. This is a common magic item at 15 points. A Spell Familiar memorizes a spell on its master's behalf, constantly rehearsing it for its big moment until it is called upon to share its arcane knowledge. This is 0-1 per wizard. The owner of a spell familiar knows one more spell chosen in the usual way than is normal for their level of wizardry. This does not increase the wizard's level. This is great. I really enjoy this. I like it a lot. Extra spells are cool. And 15 points. And it's common. Like I don't know if I'd put it on every caster I own. Maybe I would someday, but it's good.
I think it's exceptional.
Would definitely be something I would consider to put on every caster in my army if I were playing.
Exactly. That. Unless you're taking the Infernal Puppet.
I can take both.
You can take both. Don't do it. Yes, you can.
Don't tell me what to do.
You don't do it. Don't take it. Don't take multiple arcane items because someone said it'll explode. But yeah, it's good. I really like Spell Familiar, and there's multiple armies that have this as an option, and it's good in all of them.
Yep. So my picks of the entire magic section, funnily enough, I really don't like any of the magic weapons.
They're all mediocre to bad.
They're all exactly right. I don't like either magic armors. I love Crown of Everlasting Conquest is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Doom Totem, fantastic. Where was the one in the... Favorite of the Gods, fantastic. Infernal Puppet, Spell Familiar, fan-freaking-tastic. Any guys got any more to add?
Nope. I think that's the one. Skull of Katam, situationally good.
Yep.
Yeah. You got to, I think you got to squeeze that one for all it's worth.
If you're building for it, I believe we have a patron that's like super excited about, and maybe it's not, I think it was in our patrons, it was super excited about the concept of casting like 16 magic missiles out of a Zinch cast warrior list. And this is how you do it. With and a bunch of spell familiars, and it could be good. But
what I love about that is that in most other armies, you'd be like, oh, it's cool. I just have to get to that unit and then I'll kill the casters. And you're like, oh my God, they're chaos warriors. They're like chaos warriors on horses. F my life. Yeah. There's no chaff unit. There's no chariot, you know, war machine killing unit that's going to get this job done. And then when you get there, they're essentially, you know, they're chaos champions. All the sorcerers are. They're all freaking hard to kill as well. I love that unit. That unit is absolutely terrifying. Bona fide Death Star. All right, we're into Warriors of Chaos special rules. I really wish, and this is my first gripe, that the special rules were at the front, at the start of the rules with the army list, so that you read through the units with context.
You didn't have to scroll all the way down to see the thing. Yep.
Correct, to get the context of the unit. You read the context, you read what all your units have, and then you find out how you have to build that list, and then you look at the freaking unit. That's my personal gripe. First special rule is Chaos Armor. A model with this special rule has a ward save against any wounds suffered. The armor value of the ward save is shown in the brackets. You know, next, so it'll be a Chaos Armor X. Most of the time, it is a 5 or a 6. There are some very exclusive, you know, Demon Princes that have Chaos Armor 4. In addition, a wizard with this special rule may wear this army without a penalty. So this armor without a penalty. So you can have heavy armor, full armor, whatever, on the Chaos Sorcerers, which is good. This is a phenomenal rule, but yeah, boys?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, another yeah. Reward save and cast an armor.
It's so good. So good. Oh, crazy. And it's one of the reasons that this army works, because... Yeah, if you had squishy sorcerers in your super armored units, you'd feel like a big dumb when they just got sniped out.
Super dumb.
Super dumb. All right, ensorcelled weapons, Peter.
Yeah. Many of the Chaos Gods' chosen champions brandish ensorcelled weapons. They're heavy, black blades, inscribed with dark runes that glow with infernal power. Hand weapons, singular. Carried by a model with the special rule, have the magical attack special rule, and an armor-piercing characteristic of -1. So this only applies to one single non-magical hand weapon. If you have extra hand weapons, you lose it. If you attack with anything else, you don't get it. This is only if you're slapping a guy with your singular hand weapon on a whatever.
That feels like a balanced choice more than anything else.
For sure. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it could really get out of hand if you had it on lances and halberds and stuff like that.
It's good. It's good to have. Magical attacks are always great. The fact that this army,
I love it.
Like 50 to 60% of your army has access to them, and most of the rest can get it with a mark, is pretty good. So,
man, it means to me that like ethereal and demons just like cannot thrive in a chaos Warriors of Chaos meta. Like just
they
get see you later, alligator, absolutely defiled. Danny, Gaze of the Gods, tell us about this big old table. Because it's chaos, baby. It's got to have a table somewhere. It's the rules.
Yeah, of course. Got to have a random table. We didn't even talk about the giant.
No, we skipped it.
Well, Gaze of the Gods is during the command subphase of their turn, a character with a special role may choose to roll on the Gaze of the Gods. So this is every turn. It's not just when things happen like it used to be. You get to choose to do this every turn during the command phase. Of your turn. So Gaze of the Gods table, if you roll one, the champion gets stupidity. If they already have stupid, they get -1 to their leadership.
It's pretty sad. Don't roll ones.
Absolutely. Yep. It's bad. Unnatural quickness. The champion until your next start of turn phase gets +1 initiative. Iron skin until your next start of turn phase +1 toughness. Those two are only till your next turn. However, murderous mutation, long tentacles whip from beneath the champion's armor. See, I channeled Peter there for a second. To grasp their enemies, you get +1 weapon skill for the rest of the game to a max of 10. Mm-hmm. Dark Fury is +1 attack for the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And then Apotheosis is +1 strength and leadership if you roll a 6.
Mm-hmm.
All benefit, very little downside.
So you can. So there, you may choose to roll on this. So you don't have to every turn. Yeah.
And it's every character. So,
I mean, there is a...
It has this.
It's every character. There is a good reason that, like, there is some good brain math you can do to pick when a character wants to roll on this and how many times you want to risk rolling on this for upsides or downsides. I love this. I love this mechanic. I think it's really cool. Petey, yeah. Baby, do you like it?
Oh, it's amazing. It's just great. And that's, it's why I really love Favor of the Gods, because I will, like, you will have to pry this roll out of my cold, dead hands. I want to do it all the time, no matter what. Yeah. Maybe not on my sorcerers as much, but on my, even then I'll probably still do it, but on my lords or aspiring champions and stuff. Yep. Even once I hit stupid, I'm like, it can't happen again.
I'm not a coward. I'm just going to roll for it every turn.
Exactly. You just roll.
This is what I mean. There's going to be like players. There are going to be identities of Chaos Warriors of Chaos players who never roll or roll once when and you know, with the Favor of the Gods back up, or they roll until they have to use their Favor of the Gods and then stop. And then it's just going to be like all game, every turn, every round, every character. Lol. This, I love it. I love
when this goes off. Adds, it's the flavor hot.
It adds.
If you roll a bunch of fours, fives, and sixes, it's crazy. It's wild.
It hurts.
Yeah.
Man, the fact that you can spend like two or three turns jostling for position with a unit that is just like going to go into this other unit and like absolutely annihilate it, and then your opponent rolls two sixes on Favor of the Gods, and you're like, I can't charge anymore. okay, I'm running. I'm leaving. I don't want to fight anymore, Daddy. We're done. Going home.
I think I had an aspiring champion BSB at the end of the game once have seven attacks at strength six, because I only rolled fives and sixes the whole game.
Yeah.
And his leadership was 10.
Disgusting.
And I was just like, he's the best. This guy's just he's so awesome.
And anytime you roll a one and turn it into like a 4-5 or a six, but with favor with the once per game roll, you're just gonna feel like you are actually blessed by the Chaos Gods. You're like, ha, it was meant to be all along. Yeah, it's gonna be real nice. Anyway, we're into the Marks of Chaos, and then we have the Magic Lore, and then we are all done with this bad boy. All right. Marks of Chaos will work as thus. A model cannot have more than one Mark of Chaos. All models within a unit must have the same Mark of Chaos. A character with a mark of a specific god can only join a unit with the same mark, with the Mark of Chaos undivided or with no mark. A character with the Mark of Chaos undivided can join any unit as normal. All right, first of which is Chaos Undivided. Models with the Mark of Chaos Undivided can reroll any failed Fear, Panic, or Terror test and just blank it straight off the bat. That's really good.
It's free.
Very good for free.
And it's just on almost all your units.
Yeah.
You just dodge one of the major impediments to your units doing what you want them to do turn by turn. And I think that is a great place to start. Take it away, Peter, with Marker Corn.
Yeah, Marker Corn. Models with Marker Corn get Frenzy. It's situation.
He didn't read it.
Right.
He didn't read it. Look at this guy.
Corn doesn't do it for me most of the time.
Fair.
I do like Marco Corn on like some of the chariots sometimes, because it just gets you those extra couple attacks on the riders. It's great on like any unit where you're okay if they end up out of position, I guess is my way of always looking at it. Because I like being in control of my positioning on the board. I tend to shy away from Frenzy if I can avoid it, unless I'm like going all in on it. But yeah, it's good.
Beautiful. Let's keep it rolling, Danny.
All right, we got Mark of Nurgle. Any enemy model that directs its attacks against a model with the Mark of Nurgle during the combat phase must reroll any to hit rolls of a natural six. You're dealing with units that are very typically like weapon skill five or four at the worst. So even the Warhounds are weapon skill four. So like this means that a lot of times your opponent, this is like a minus one, like minus 0.5 to hit kind of.
Yeah. So you know what you're saying is that they'll be hitting half the time. And so therefore approximately of those things that hit, a third of them will be sixes if they're hitting on a four plus. You know, on that we're talking about in you know perfect world where averages in dice actually occur, and they'll have to reroll those going through another modifier with 50% of them hitting. So
totally,
a la we have 12 dice, six of them hit, two of them are sixes, reroll them, one of those are hit, one of them is not. So you've taken one hit out of a 12 dice pool, a la a 0.5 to hit. Is this any good? Is it actually any good in application, or is it just a bunch of head math for no reason?
I actually like it
I do.
Well, yeah. Like if you have a defensive block, I think it's pretty good. It's also really good against anybody who has poison in combat.
In close combat. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any spells that they have access to that just give innate neg ones or?
Neg ones? No, they've, well, maybe in,
maybe from baseline
like,
lores,
but like demonology or whatnot, but not, yeah, not from their like lores of chaos.
Because if they could stack a neg one to hit on top of this, it would be genuinely fantastic, I think.
Yeah, because they can't take illusion. Otherwise, you could pop the illusion signature, but that's not an option. I think, yeah, I think you're not, you don't have a way to get minus one to hit, which is
probably for the best.
Probably a balanced thing, yeah.
All right, Marcus Lanesh. Models with the Marcus Lanesh have a +1 initiative during the first round of any combat. Additionally, if the majority of the models in the unit have have the Marcus Lanesh, the unit automatically passes any paddock test it's required to make. It's funny that they say if the majority of the models in the unit have the Marcus Lanesh when it pretty much denoted in the terms and conditions at the top that they all must have the same mark.
Well, you can have a like an unmarked character join a Marcus
Lanesh. Oh, that's true. Unit,
right? So that's kind of where that comes in. So
yeah, fair. Marcus seems pretty decent. I don't see it as being, well, it is a portion of Chaos Undivided with a conditional +1 initiative. I think it's totally fine. I don't think initiative is where this army is struggling though. Like, I think the initiative is in the better than most range most of the time. Your initiative 3 or better pretty much across the board. So I don't think initiative is where this army is struggling.
I don't mind it. Like I said, with the great weapons, if you're going to force your opponent to be always strike last, and then you're now on initiative 5 on the charge, or at least initiative 2, that first round when you get smoked, so that you're hitting before a lot of the stuff. That's generally fine. The panic thing is good if you're like me and you have a knee jerk reaction to failing rerollable panic tests to Chaos Undivided. Yep. But I do generally like Chaos Undivided more for most units because it's free.
Fair.
It's right. Free, baby.
Mark of Zinch, Danny.
Mark of Zinch. Models with the Mark of Zinch have the flaming attacks and magic resistance 1 rules. In addition, if a wizard with the Mark of Zinch has joined a unit with the Mark of Zinch that has a unit strength of 10 or more, they get +1 to cast. Should they leave the unit for any reason, or should that you fall below 10, you lose the modifier.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of sick.
Yeah, it's totally fine. It's just so the issue with this, right, is that like, it doesn't directly boost any combat. It just boosts magic. And then because flaming attacks is pretty much good and bad in equal measures, I would say.
Yeah, I really do not rate. I do not rate the magic resistance. Sorry, the flaming attacks pass. Magic resistance 1 is fine. Yeah, but in 8th edition, we would have seen this as amazing because most of the casters in 8th edition were like in a bunker that was meant to be there to insulate them from, missile fire. Thinking about that in the same terms is really good. It's also a downside, actually, to taking. You have to take actually a larger unit of knights, because if you just take 5 knights in this, they have to kill 1 knight and they're taking away the whole point of being Zinch. So that is a little awkward as well. But still, just on face value, I think it's fine.
Well, the wizard counts towards it, right? So you'd need to kill 2. Like I usually run my knights in 6 or 7 anyway, so that's fine. Like they'll have to use a few of them if you're going to go on knights. You can put this in Chaos Warriors, but I find it's a little too slow. Unless you're using like a lot of conveyance spells, which is very helpful for the Warriors or Marauders. I think the main reason why you're taking this is like this is where you're going to put your Sorcerer Lord. Whatever bunker you're putting your Sorcerer Lord in, this is the mark you're taking to make sure that they go off, son.
Yeah, I do like the fact that if someone is trying to, shoot that bunker dead now with magic themselves, obviously you have your dispel because your level 4 is in there and they'll have to be in range of it. And they're also, have the magic resistance as well. So it's actually much harder for in the magic showdown for their magic to hurt you and your magic is easy to hurt them. So I like that.
And you're probably in puppet range too. So that's like another.
Yep. Oh, yeah. You'd have to be in puppet range. If they're going to missile you, most of them, 24, whatnot. So, yeah, that's a great point. All right, Winds of Chaos, Danny, the first of the lore spells.
Yeah, so if you're Mark of Undivided, if you have a Mark of Chaos, you can also pick these like generic spells. Undivided has their own in this edition. It's called Winds of Chaos. It's a hex. It has a casting value of 7 or 9+ with a range of 24 inches. If this spell is cast with a result of 7 or more, the target enemy unit suffers a -1 to their movement characteristic. If you roll a 9 or more, they suffer a -2 to their movement characteristic, and it lasts until the next start of turn subphase, so not remains in play. Your 21-inch range hex is dope.
Mm. It is.
Yeah. I like this a lot.
-2 movement, because you're often going to be hitting that 9, is very good. I mean, most infantry is now moving 2 inches. Dwarves are moving 1. Not that they were moving anyway. You know, your cavalry is often now at a 5 or a 6. It's very helpful. You're screwing up charges. Like, we've talked a little bit about, we've had questions, sorry, about spatial reasoning in the game, which we'll have to address someday. But this, like, screws up spatial reasoning so bad once this goes off, right? So
I think the spell is very good. Very good. And if you are undefeated, absolutely, why not?
Isn't this awesome on screening chaff?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, so good. So good. Acquiescence is up next. Marcus Sinesh ability. It is a hex also, casting value of 6+ and a range of 12. Until the end of the combat phase, the target enemy unit becomes subject to the strike last ability. So a 12-inch range on a 6+ strikes last. Pretty, pretty spicy also. I do not mind a little bit of acquiescence in my life. But Fleshy Abundance, Peter, specifically because it has the best flavor text, is why I'm giving you this one.
Well, I was going to ignore it, but just for you, Fleshy Abundance is for a Mark of Nurgle caster. Great wobbling mounds of fat spill out from beneath the armor of the sorcerer and their comrades.
Yeah, I made the right enchantment choice.
With a casting value of 7+, its range self, it's a remains in play spell. While the spell is in play, the caster and any unit they have joined gains a +1 modifier to their toughness characteristic to a maximum of 7, because it's a nurgly number.
+1 toughness on yourself and unit on a 7 nurgly as well. Is it any good?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's remains in play, which is good and bad. Like, it's great in that if your opponent isn't able to dispel it on their turn, like, you don't have to recast it, which is stellar. It's bad in that oftentimes you're only going to have it on you for like that following combat phase, in a lot of scenarios. But, you know, +1 toughness. Toughness is a good characteristic to keep you from taking wounds. We already said if you're taking wounds, you're playing the game wrong. It's great. It's if you're running a Mark of Nurgle casters, which is really the only thing, is like, are you taking this over Tzeentch for the +1? And it's actually maybe worth it, because it's a great creature.
It's self. So that means you can cast it in combat, which is also really good. +1 toughness, and like the casting value is low, I feel like.
Oh yeah, a 7. The thing is, though, it makes it much easier to dispel as it remains in play in the next turn.
That's true,
right? Yeah. It's a 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other of goodness.
Yeah, something I learned the other day was that you have to actually be in range of the wizard to dispel remains in play spells, not where the spell is.
The spell is. Yeah. Really interesting, which of course will be self in this one, so it doesn't really matter. Same difference. But in a lot of other examples, absolutely right. It is a good distinction. Danny, what's the last one?
We got Blue Fire. This is your Tzeentch spell. Magic. It's a magic missile, casting value 9, of course, because it's Tzeentch. Range is 18 inches, which is twice 9. The target enemy unit suffers D6 +3 strength 4 hits with an AP -2 and flaming attacks.
And 6 plus so 3 is 9. You get
9 hits on D6 +3. That's important, too.
Yeah. There's so many 9s.
Yeah.
Did you guys get it?
Quad 9.
Did you get it? The corn spell is only on 8s, but they removed it.
It had to get omitted, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That take it out. It was too powerful. It was way
they
too
cut good. It for space. Yeah.
Yeah, cut it for time. Cut it for time.
This is a totally acceptable magic missile. In fact, it's on the better side of the magic missiles.
Yeah. Do you think this is better than the demonology spell? Because I think I do.
I mean it's what? D6 +3 versus 2d6 plus just 2d6, right?
Yeah.
Strength 4 AP 1. So I think
an extra AP.
Yeah, I think it's slightly better. Like, it's worse, I guess, into like chaff, but otherwise, this is great into more elite units that AP2 makes totally a big difference.
All right, that is going to bring us to the end of this review, our very first faction review. Hopefully, guys,
and we didn't even talk about the Chaos Dragon for 2 seconds.
We did not. We're gonna quickly pontificate upon how good and how well stuck together the internal external balances of this faction are. We have a rating system. As in, how happy as a Warriors of Chaos player should be out of 10 with this book? Like, you know, if you are a Warriors of Chaos enthusiast, how happy will you be with your Warriors of Chaos experience? Danny, what would you give it out of 10?
I'd say it's probably a 7. I don't think that it's probably their best version of the rules, but I think it's a I think it's more fun to play against than some of their other iterations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't have the super oppressive top end, apart from possibly the dragon build, which we'll get to in part 2. Peter, what about yourself out of 10?
Oh yeah, I'm with Danny. I'm 100% this is a 7 out of 10 army. Unless you like having a shooting phase, in which case it's a 2 out of 10. But that's always been the case for Warriors of Chaos, except for the Hell Cannon. And now your Hell Cannon sucks shit. So don't take this army if you like to shoot things. Take this army if you like to bash things. Because you will good bash.
I'm exactly the same. I think it is a solid 7 out of 10. Faction, and I think you should be pretty happy with it. Now we're not going to be doing the you know the tier list nonsense that you know possibly is not in the right place for fantasy. We need to be stratified and a lot more experienced, but we can go, do we think this is strong, balanced, or weak? Danny?
I'd vote balanced.
Yep.
I agree.
I agree as well.
Other than maybe the Chaos Dragon. I'm not sure yet if that's too strong. But the rest of the book. Ace balanced.
Yeah, to be fair, and I haven't played against that guy yet, so I just have like a feeling of how good he is, and it feels maybe too good. Yeah.
I think apart from one problem piece, which would be fixed pretty easily, the rest of the book is really well put together. I do like the internal balance of it having a bunch of different units that feel worth taking and not just feeling like it has a mono build. Even though it does have like kind of a mono application in like, I'm going to go absolutely annihilate you in combat. But we are going to, on that note, we are going to check out. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this hour and 40 minutes of Old World Charm goodness. And please come and join us over in part 2, where we're going to be writing lists, talking about archetypes and deep diving into some matchup theory. And you can find all that goodness over on Patreon. But gentlemen, time to say our goodbyes. Danny.
Been listening to that Old World Charm with those charming chats, Adam, Danny, and Peter the Falcon. Thanks ever so much. Terrio.